This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thank you, sisters. You've been listening to this broad podcast here on Joy 94.9. Don't forget to tune in to us Monday nights at 9 p.m. on Joy for feminism in your ears.
Michelle, of course. No, that's cool.
I did a documentary on sexism in video games like 3 years ago before Gamergate. And it was just like a thing like kind of talking about you just like hazing and shit like that. Now I was getting people on my Tumblr being like, why aren't you just fucking? I'm just like, dude, why are you so mad? Like, you know this is a problem. Surely you've become aware of this being a problem.
Like,
you're trying to take our stuff. No. Just share.
Yeah.
So, they've never played Pass the Parcel, have they?
Well, they have. They just held on to it.
Yeah. Those are the people that time it. So when they unwrap it, they make sure they get it last.
Yeah. Well, it's
you know?
Well, I think also when you're used to being on top, any attempt at equality feels like you're being oppressed because you technically are no longer been given as much status.
And that's why I've got to, like, I do come at it from a perspective of empathy, because I do understand this probably feels like shit at the same time. Like, well, okay, so for me, again, this is just me talking.
Oh, no, I understand.
So I can say that, and that keeps me from lashing out.
Yeah.
Because I know that in time, we're going to win.
Yeah, it just takes
so it's going to be a war of attrition.
But people's lives are getting torn apart in the meantime.
They are, and I'll fight for them, and I'll fight the people who are tearing it. Yeah. So the people who are just hurting, I'm like, yo, I recognize you're hurting. Let's find ways around that. The people who are actually hurting others, no sympathy.
No.
None whatsoever.
Bombastic, bodacious, revolutionary, rash, outraged, organized, assertive, activist, days.
Broad.
On Joy 94.9.
This is Sonia for Broad on Joy 94.9.
Ruby Susan's here too.
PAX weekend, Melbourne. We've got Shell Osborne.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Programming Department Coordinator, CG Spectrum.
That's me.
I'm sure lots of other things. No doubt.
Indie dev in my own right and long time programmer, translator.
Very successful, self-published. Indie developer, multiple games since she was
would
a young thing.
Would you say activist as well?
Oh most definitely.
Definitely.
Most definitely.
Yes. We have just come from the diversity panel, so that might give you some ideas.
Designing for the Many, Inclusive Game Design Techniques. And Epona Schwer.
Yes, you totally got that right.
UX Director 2 and 2.
And so, yes, so that's my day job. I design educational games for 2 and 2. And in my own time, I am an independent game developer with Shell, a writer and UX designer, game designer.
And where are you hailing from?
So I'm coming from a tiny little country known as California, which is just off the side of America, about 12 years ago, though. So it's a very long time ago.
I'm
pretty much,
pretty
much a freaking Aussie over here.
I'm originally from Perth, and then spent some time in Malaysia and then New York and things like that, and so I've moved around a lot, but eventually I've settled in Sydney, so that's where we're from.
Right, so we're all Australian now.
So we're not home as much as PAX Oz would like
Melbourne
to say.
Well, yeah,
they're trying. I acknowledge that.
So some of the stuff that was said at the panel, a great panel, not enough time.
Oh, thank
we ran
you.
Ran out of time. It's
yeah, we could have gone for ages.
Very fast, and it's about basically inputting, I guess, some. For developers to what can they do, you know,
to increase diversity both in terms of in representation in our games but also representation in games companies as
so someone you both mentioned the need for people to be able to speak up at the table to say, oh, by the way, as a woman or as someone of an Arabic background, that's actually not quite right, and the lack of those voices means that the game goes out with that message of they didn't give a shit.
Totally. Yeah. And the thing is, it's part of that as well is you can, because no game developer really makes a game because they're just wasting time. Most game developers give a shit. Most game developers release games that they love and they care about. And so when they hear this message, you don't give a shit, of course they're going to be wounded. And the thing is that it doesn't cost that much for a game developer to get those other voices, get through the research, get it right. And not only do they get to avoid the, oh, you didn't give a shit thing, But then they also get access to this incredible fan base who goes, oh my God, you're the one developer who cared about me. You're the one developer who gave a shit, and I'm going to support you. And that fan base introduces you to another fan base. So there's the whole gist of the panel was basically there's no downside at all, even financially, to just making your projects more diverse.
But I thought it was interesting you brought that up. Like one of the other cases last year was when the game Pillars of Eternity came out, which is a very text-based, old-school Dungeons & Dragons-style game. A lot of people were really critiquing it on the sites and voting it down on Metacritic because it included trans characters. And they were saying this was included, it doesn't go with the story, it was done to pander, you know, and it did, like, affect the game because everyone was talking about that issue. And that's happened with a few other games, like, you know, so when you say there's no downside, do you think there is some fear from companies into having to deal with the conversations that always occur when you get traditional, you know, the old school core gamers of white men being like, that's not what I'm used to and I hate it and you're doing it wrong and I will never buy your stuff again.
Well, the Brad and me just wants to say that we've all heard of Pillars of Eternity and these jerks online certainly gave a lot of free advertising and free word of mouth, so thank you very much for that.
There definitely are different ways to, I guess, like, approach diversity, and whether it comes to, like, it can be done in bad ways. I definitely would agree that there's the token way of doing it, or the, you know, the even split, where it's like we try to get, like, people from all different ethnicities and races and so on, which is another way of acknowledging that that's a factor still. And the same way where they say, oh, we have a token trans lady, it is inherently problematic in a way. And of course, there's always the way of approaching it where, if it's all based on one metric, then obviously is that metric flawed? Like, say, for example, whoever has the highest qualifications doesn't take into account institutional racism at, you know, in education. So there are definitely, like, ways to have that discussion. And I think that in Pillars of Eternity, it definitely would have been nicer if she had a bit of more of a role, or if in any way her being trans affected her gameplay. If her story was actually part of the game,
that
in a
would
functional
be interesting.
Sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It seemed like even her presence in the story caused this huge barrier for a lot of people. Mm. Same with when Russ announced that, you know, that race and now gender will be done, you know, assigned randomly, and people were really upset, saying, "I don't want to have to play a girl, or I don't want to play a black person."
In those situations, yeah. I would agree with Pony.
In those situations, like any, I'm having been trolled quite a bit in the past. One of the only reasons why anyone knew who I was online was because I got trolled. So the Brad and me goes, you know what? The Brad and me goes, thank you so much, gents, for my free marketing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. But that, on the flip side as well, anything we release, someone's gonna hate it. And if they're the ones who are going to hate it, okay, we have a whole group of people who are going to love it to pay attention to. Yeah. And it's going to hurt, don't get me wrong. As much as I can be blasé, I was in tears. It did suck. But every creator releases what they make into a world of people who are going to hate or love it. And the reasons change for every project. And
whether they include trans characters or not, it's just going to be the same.
There will always be people who hate it.
And I mean,
that's the thing you say. I say to people as well, it's not for you then. Yeah. There's plenty out there that you can play with.
Exactly.
There's an endless amount, but we need more of ours.
But with
exactly.
Yeah.
So we have
our stories
too.
To play with.
Totally.
But I suppose with that as well, as women gamers, we become at quite an early age being used to be able to connect with male protagonists, because a lot of the games we've played had male protagonists. And you have to be able to enjoy it. But we do. And there seems to be a lot of reluctance for particularly white men, not all of them, but to play characters that are not aligned with themselves because it takes too much of an effort. What do you think we can do to really start to coax in this idea of being able to play, not just, you know, when you can select your own character, but the set main character that is not a white guy, people can still feel that I can relate to this person?
That's what we're trying to do now.
Yeah.
We're making a character that is Zambian, Nigerian, has an Adam's apple, and everyone can just come up with...
If they want to theorize, by all means.
Go for it.
Right.
I think part of it is, I'll actually reference something that George R. R. Martin said about writing female characters, and someone said, well, how do you write female characters so well? It's like, well, you know what? I just write good characters, and they happen to be female. Mm. So part of making characters relatable is you just make good characters. Just make it as good as you possibly can be, and we relate to well-told stories. We relate to really strong, powerful individuals and strength of a variety of different definitions. So if you just make it a point to do the best fucking job you possibly can, that already opens the door to relatability. Totally. And there's going to be an awful lot of people who you never would have thought would have gotten into that character loving the shit out of it just because it's a quality experience.
Yeah, and also when their backgrounds or their stories affect the choices that they make, it makes them more, not necessarily identifiable, but it makes them more real. It makes them more, I guess...
tangible.
Yeah.
And then you can... relax a bit more.
Exactly.
It takes another notch down of like, oh, that's another thing that can be.
We can all relate to each other, even though we're all from different backgrounds.
Yeah,
but it's
exactly.
You know, why would it be different in a game if they make choices based on what they do?
Well, games are the great opportunity that we have, the great potential, great window door. All those metaphors. Games are here, and they're not going away. And you aren't going away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you guys.
No.
Exactly.
What are you working on now? This Nigerian / Zambian.
So that's kind of console game.
Masterpiece, Mistress Piece.
It's a PS4 title. So we're working on a game centered around Yoruba mythology with a Zambian protagonist, and it's, I guess, how do you pitch it? A neon. Trash
okay,
punk.
So this is a Afrofuturism neon trash punk adventure, something like if you took World of Warcraft, smashed it with New York City street life, where whenever you walk around the street at night, you look down a dark corridor, you see what might be monsters in the shadows. You think to yourself, no, surely not. No, actually, yes, there's monsters in the shadows. They want to eat you. So this game is set in that sort of urban fantasy universe. And for 95% of people, this is a game about a girl going to the city, fucking around, having a good time, getting laid, fighting bad guys, kind of avoiding saving the world because the city's so much fun. The other 5% of the people will be sitting here from the perspective of why is she going to the city to do these things? She's going to the city to avoid something that's incredibly difficult for her to face. And I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are some very real life traumas that we're exploring here. And then very real ways that people cope with this by going off and having adventures. So... it's going to be fun. Thank you.
There's a lot of the influences where we explicitly thought, okay, so we can create this game. We can create a fantasy. So we got this, like, urban fantasy thing.
Yeah.
So we've got, like, ruins. We've got, you know, whatever else. It's like we've taken all of those situations where it would have an European or just, I guess, like, Western influence and then tried to extrapolate what it would be like if African culture, African... religion and so on was as prevalent as Western influence
so, like,
in globalization.
Alternate history type of
exactly.
Or even a very real future history.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of this is taking place in a future context where can you imagine Monsanto having a standing army? Mm. Can you imagine where corporatization has taken over government, where the trade agreements are basically exactly.
We're talking about North Dakota, right?
So imagining that into the future, and then imagining where are these battlefields going to be when you've got people fighting for the very right to be human and to live against people who are really just paying attention to the bottom line on a spreadsheet. And these battles are going to take place everywhere, and we are just picking a location where it's going to be strong and fucking effective and awesome.
It sounds unlike anything I've heard of before, which makes
me
extremely
really
excited.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
When will it be? So we're
estimating about a year and a half or something.
Yeah. Okay. So props. That's if we can get to alpha, we'll show next PAX. So we'll try and get to alpha by next PAX and show alpha then. And then that gives us between that PAX and the next PAX to get it ready for release.
We've had, proof of concepts showing at the last PAX and at GX. But we're taking this amount of time just between
those
two.
You'll be at GX for next year, too?
This one.
We'll be there as humans!
Yes, we'll definitely be there. We won't have a booth this time. We're spending a little bit of time working on the engine and getting
it right. We want to get it right.
Just for next PAX.
Jumping back a little bit, with as far as diversity in games, there's still a lot of obstacles in as far as accessing advertising funding and major companies being willing to invest money in games that don't feel as traditional or will not sell as well in the audience. Do you think that is changing?
I don't think it's changing for the small fries because advertising will always hold their funding back for the big companies. And I could be a dude bro with a 3 o'clock shadow right now and they'll still hold the funding back because... small fries just don't get noticed. We're blips on the radar. So there's actually a bit of a comfort in knowing that we're going to have to do this on our own, so we're just going to do it on our own. But get big enough, get loud enough, and have enough people playing your game and purchasing your game, and the money will be there. Like, basically, money is, it sounds horrible, but it's really neutral. It will go to wherever it's going to be able to duplicate.
It's
wherever
more or less the only factor that's in consideration.
Is, yeah.
But like piranhas and fish food.
Totally.
I suppose,
totally. You know, be tasty. Go out there, be really fucking tasty.
Doesn't matter about the size of the fish or the size of the body part. Or
This is good time.
We should wrap it up.
Okay.
We are stealing you a little bit in our little corner of this place.
But before we do, if I can get you to say your names and you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
Yeah, no problem. This is Shell Osborne. You're listening to Broad. Wait, sorry, what was
on
it?
Joy.
I'm so sorry.
That's
on
all right.
Joy 94.9.
Thank you. This is Shell Osborne. You're listening to Joy on Joy
94.9.
You're listening to Broad on
you
Joy.
You say it first.
Yo, this is it. This is Epona. And
Shell.
And you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9? Yeah!
I'm going to try it myself.
Yeah.
Okay. This is Shell Osborne. You're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9. You're the best. Thank you.
B-R-O-A-D.
B-R-O-A-D. That's it. Yep. I had to think about that.
Yeah. It's funny because we say in American English, we say broad.
Oh, okay. Well, you say it in your American tongue.
Can I say it with an American accent?
Please. Right, yeah, please do.
This is Jamie Babbitt, the director of But I'm a Cheerleader, and you are listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
The 1986 women's mural from Bombonera to Barbed Wire on Smith Street was defaced early this year. Responding to the community outcry following its destruction, the Women's Mural Documentation Project is capturing your reactions to this defacement and to the 30-year history of the significant feminist mural. Danielle and Sally from the Women's Art Register want to hear from you. Get in touch, thewomensmuralproject@gmail.com. A community message supported by Broad and Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.